Before we go to questions, I have a public comment on this one in particular, and it's Mr. James Leach. Come up at this time. Good morning.
Morning, Board. My name is Jim Leach. I live on the Klamath River. I do have a question for Mr. Branson about the pulsing. Since the initial pulse of 3,000 CSF, the black stuff came down the river, which is January. The river has not gone above 2,000 CSF since then. We are drawing it down to 1,000, pulsing it up to 2,000. That doesn't move any sediment in the river. Maybe it's bringing some water out of the lake into the river. I don't know what the process is. Normally on our property, we don't plant in the lower level until after the spring runoff. The river's running maximum 1,700 CSF when they pulse it. Spring runoff is normally 6,000 to 8,000 CSF. I would like to know if they are going to use that water to help pulse some of the sediment down the river, or are they going to continue with the 1,000 CSF pulses, which will not move any sediment in the river. It will only add to it. So,
okay,
that's my question.
Thank you. One second, and then we'll go back to Mr. Branson. Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Thank you.
William Simpson?
Mr. Chairman, Board. So we've heard from Mr. Branson that
Sir,
he said...
Your name for the record?
William Simpson.
Thank you.
I'm a rancher, citizen scientist on Kotko Lake, or Iron Gate Lake, I'm sorry. We've heard from Mr. Branson time and time again that he sent 5 to 7 million cubic yards of sediment down the river. We know from the studies that were done by GEC that there's approximately 20 million cubic yards, and that's according to an engineering company. We know that if we just do simple mathematics, there's probably about 15 million cubic yards of sediment left in the lake bottom sediments. We know from the CDM Smith study that in those sediments are toxic compounds. It's a fact. It's in their study. And I read it very carefully. Some are under the acceptable levels, but they're bioaccumulative, which means long-term consumption or integration into any kind of animal tissue. If you can reach levels that are toxic, cause debilitation, potentially death. Those toxins are in there. They talk about DDT and DDT analytes. They talk about dioxin they found. They talk about all the heavy metals, chromium, iron, aluminum, arsenic. They're all in there. Okay, now some are below and some are above. And this is according to CDM Smith, the Stillwater, CDM Smith Stillwater study. Okay, so Mr. Branson gets up here and tries to tell this board that the sediments don't have toxins. That's just flat not true. That is a misrepresentation. There's toxins. Now, they're bioaccumulative, so because right then and there, the way they tested them, they were just below some, and some are above. That doesn't matter because bioaccumulative toxins can be very deadly over time. The other thing he says is the groundwater is not affected. That's not true either. Lead goes into solution. It just goes into solution. So if you have a well in the alluvium, it can move into your well. And so do these other things. The way they do their wordsmithing allows what you would call a literal truth, but it's scientifically untrue. And this is what we have to watch out for here. These people underrepresent, they spin, and they defer answering questions. Mr. Branson is an expert at those things. Thank you.
Lindsay, Rhea?
Ray.
Ray, sorry.
Good morning, my name is Lindsay Ray and I live in the KRCE, and I just wanted to read a little piece of an email that I received from Mark Branson when I asked him about my changes in my well water. and he told me the, you know, how far my property was away from the river and the feet in which the river is and how it my water couldn't be affected. But he also said he doesn't know the depth of my well, and my property is 300 feet higher in elevation. So if my well was 650 feet deep,
address the board up here, please.
Would that be change of his email that said that he's looked into and completed the investigation of my home? How could he complete the investigation of my well water without knowing the depth of my well and the size of my aquifer? And also, I've made comments at previous meetings about testing that my family and my son has had. So there is health impacts because my son has an elevated chromium test. So what do you have to say about that, Mr. Pearson?
Thank you. A. James?
That's me. I have questions, but I really would like to state that I have a memorandum of agreement at Denson Home.
Can't hear you.
Yeah.
Bring the mic close to your mouth.
State your name first and then go ahead.
Ann James.
Thank you.
And I'd like to present this. I did present it to. So she's going to take care of that. What I'd like to say is.
Can you speak up?
Speak right into that.
On September 23rd, 2016, Pacific Corp and KRRC filed a joint application with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, to amend the Klamath Hydraulic Project number 2082 licensing by placing the J.C. Boyle Dam Copco 1 and Copco 2 and Iron Gate Dams into separate licenses, the Lower Klamath River Project and a transfer license to KRRC. This is a 13-page document, and it's signed. I really believe that if you can look this up and read it yourselves, you'll see you'll see where we really are. I'd like to know too, the Copco in 1964 was built by the Army Engineering Corps, and it was specifically for our hydroelectric. And I am curious to know, once all of this hydroelectric, three dams are in California and the one is in Oregon. So after reading this, all of you and Doug Malva, I think you'll be able to go a little further in different directions on who actually owns what. This is a memorandum of agreement where they were asking FERC to okay this. And so I'd like to see if this man can show you and the court and our state the actual legal licensing. Because apparently FERC, later on in this document, FERC states that it didn't give the licensing entirely to KRRC. It's also to Pacific Corp. They did not let Pacific Corp entirely out of the responsibility. And also, too, you will read earlier on in this document that, I'm sorry, I'm angry, but I'm also concerned that the documentation that I have was not given to you in 2018 or 2016. So what I'd like to say also is I am a R Ranch owner, and my husband and I moved up here after our son died, and we made our lives here. We are we own our home outright. We pay our taxes. I work for a world company at this point that I absolutely love in Yreka, and I would hope that my help here is to help you help all of us. Where is our electrical, where's our infrastructure? I think it's American infrastructure.
I'll need you to wrap up, please.
Okay. Where is it going to come from, and where are we going to get our electricity after this is all completed?
Okay. Thank you. Great chair.
better than that.
Greg Jeter, resident of Kapko Lake. I would ask that Mr. Ransom respond to the amount of wildlife that has been lost in this process. And everything I've heard from him so far says everything's going according to a plan. And it just, you know, I'm a doctor, and as a doctor, I take an oath to, above all, do no harm. And it seems like that moral compass was not followed to any degree in this project. And I know there were ways to go about draining the reservoirs that would have helped with the loss of wildlife. It would have not been so devastating. So I've never heard him once talk about the casualties of this project, and to me that's quite disturbing, and it seems very heartless of him and his organization. So I would like to put him on the spot, and I would really like to hear his views on that.
Okay, Mr. Branson, that's all the public comment I had, so we'll bring it back to the board. Which way are we? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Online, anything, Anna?
Oh, can I still?
Yeah,
this is
showing
them online.
Nothing online? Hold 1 second, Mr. Branson. Just answer it. 3 minutes on this subject.
Yes, thank you. This is Holly Hansard. I would like this person here. Sorry, to give us not just verbal assurance, but written, accountable assurance that we're not going to be harmed by a wildfire in the future, now that our lake is taken away. The mitigation, so-called mitigation, and giving this and this doesn't seem sufficient to me to replace our whole water body. You know, people say, well, it's a done deal, you know, the lake is gone. But it's not a done deal that we, in the sense that we haven't burned up yet. And I am giving verbal notice and notification that harm has been done by removing our water body without proper mitigation or sufficient mitigation to unless I can be shown otherwise and have accountability for it down the road. All this reseeding of these natural things, that's going to be a fodder for more fire, I see. So why not just concrete all that dirt over like they do at Roseburg for the Superfund site, where they see that it can't be cleaned up. That's what they had to do with the EPA when my son was little, and they realized that it can't be cleaned up, so they just concreted the whole thing over. We can't use our wells, but well, they test the wells, maybe we can after 30 years since my son was little. But I remember when the Superfund site was, we had the EPA coming up because we were getting headaches and these things in weed, and they decided they had to concrete the whole thing over. So I'm not really wanting a concrete asphalt parking lot out there, but maybe that's a lot safer. Maybe that is a better remedy than having a wildfire. I'm not saying this perfectly, but the idea is when there was a fire in 2014, just before the Bulls fire that burned down my house and me, the fire came that close to our Kapko Lake place, my dad's place. And thank goodness we had our water body there. So what is the remedy of KRCR, whatever it's called, sorry, with all due respect, and the legal team, to protect our interests in the future from a disaster of a wildfire that may or may not be man-caused, but what has just been done and what is being done is a man-caused disaster. Our dams were there for over 100 years, and it became part of the natural habitat and part of the wildness, and the wildlife incorporated that. So Thank you very much, and I didn't say that perfectly, but yes, this is a request for written accountability into the future for the next 100 years, that we, or however many years, that we won't be harmed by a wildfire due to this recent act. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Branson, I'll bring it back to the board. I'll give him that opportunity. Do you want to respond to this?
Yes, I would. Okay. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Leach was referring to pulse flows, which are being controlled and managed by the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and NOAA Fisheries to release water from Upper Klamath Lake for purposes of pulsing water with a goal of recruiting additional sediment. And the Renewal Corporation doesn't manage those flows. We simply are doing what we can to accommodate them and talk to the Bureau and NOAA Fisheries and others to try to minimize impacts on the dam removal and restoration activities. It's my understanding that as of this week, those flows will be levelized at approximately 1,325 cubic feet per second, which is consistent with the biological opinion numbers that begin at the beginning of April. So again, the Renewal Corporation is not directly involved in that. Mr. Simpson cites constituents in the sediment, some below some standard, some above some standard, but doesn't provide any evidence that any of those are available in any form that poses a public health risk. So here we are again with the same things. Ms. Ray did email me, and I did respond about her groundwater well. I did indicate to her that I didn't have sufficient information, including the depth of her well, to make any conclusions. But what she didn't say is that I also went on to report to her that after consulting with our groundwater experts, the section of the river where her well is located, like much of the Klamath River, is what's referred to as a gaining stream, which means that the groundwater is flowing from her property to the Klamath River and not from the Klamath River toward her well. So there's no mechanism by which water or sediment or compounds in the Klamath River are migrating to that well because the water's flowing in the other direction. Mr. Jeter, I believe, I apologize if I didn't get the name correct, I believe was in attendance at the COPCO community meeting that we were invited to last month, where I did acknowledge to the board and to the audience that the conditions that we have observed are regrettable. That it does impact me personally to know about and to see firsthand the mortality. Nobody wants to see that. And I'm accused often of couching it simply in, well, everything's going according to plan. But I did stand up before this board and comment about the personal impact that has on me, and I continue to feel that. But I think we need to recognize that the mortality that we saw included a significant number of non-native species. This project is an attempt to recover an unhealthy river and to create conditions favorable for recovery of iconic species of salmon and other aquatic critters that historically occupy the Klamath River in astounding numbers. And that really is the goal. We're going through a painful period, and I acknowledge that. Mr. Chairman, forgive me. I'm kind of drawing a blank now on some of the other comments. So
fire.
Fire. Thank you. I appreciate that. So the Renewal Corporation did consult with CAL FIRE and other professional firefighting organizations to put together a fire mitigation plan. And we took the direction and the guidance of those professional firefighters to invest financial resources on behalf of the communities impacted by the loss of the reservoirs as a water supply source for fighting wildfires, which we acknowledge an important source, to implement technology and hardware, including water tenders and storage tanks and dry hydrants and other equipment, wood chippers and wildfire fuels reduction equipment, high technology cameras and sensors put on towers to allow for early detection and warning. These are among the things that we invested public funds in as part of our mitigation efforts to address the loss of these reservoirs. I'm not going to assign an accountability letter committing to no future damage.
Okay.
But I will say that we undertook with firefighting professionals a significant number of mitigation measures to address the loss of the reservoirs. Was there anything else that the board would like me to address by way of those public comments, Mr. Chairman?
Unless somebody else has thought. I've got two more public comments on this, though. If we want to go to that, and then we'll bring you back up. Is that all right, Mr. Branson?
That's perfectly acceptable.
Sarah Jackson? And please make your comments to the board.
I'm Sarah Jackson, I'm from Montague, and I would like to know if Mr. Branson can supply all of these people that are affected by this a copy of the testing that they did on the heavy metals, because I would like to see that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chrissy Reynolds.
Thank you, board. I just want to talk about fire real quick.
Chrissy?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
Wendy. Chrissy Reynolds, Cockley. When it comes to fire and all of the mitigation and all the equipment and all the chippers and all that stuff, Cockley didn't get anything. Arica, other places got it. We didn't get nothing. When it comes to loss of wildlife, I really don't care whether they're native or not native. They were alive, and now they're gone. I want to know from the KRRC, as well as Fish and Wildlife, if any one of us had killed anything like that. I know the fine for a farmer is $25,000 per fish. So I want to know $25,000 in an incidental take permit put on a farmer, and yet they can kill $830,000. What is the accountability for that, for the loss of bald eagles, numerous species of endangered species, whether it's the western pond turtle or all of the other fish and wildlife that we just lost and are still losing because the pelicans no longer have food. We have no food in that river for our wildlife. How is it that these agencies can get away with something like that when you or I could not? I want to know whose is their job or what their fines are. What is the accountability to that? When it comes to the safety of the water and being able to get water for irrigation, it's so nice that they can water their plants, but they can't water the dust for the people that live there. Okay, that's not okay. I know that they have people swimming in the water with scuba gear and things like that. But would you want your kid in the water? Do you want your kid in the water? Do you want your dog in the water to try and keep your animal, you know, from just, oh, it's water. They're going to go run down to the water, or a little kid. And to be able to mitigate fire damage on, you can't even get out there right now to try and draft water from floater pump or something like that. It's not safe. So in terms of fire mitigation or just even irrigating for the dust, that's a huge problem. And to know that it's not in the plan, I don't understand why it's not in the plan, because we certainly brought it up to FERC many times over the years. Thank you.
We're going to go online. Anna, can I take the first one?
Agree 100%. Emily, it's your turn to speak.
Thank you. This is Emily Simmons with our ranch. I just have a question about what was mentioned on an earlier agenda item when they said that any sediment that tests positive for arsenic is the responsibility of KRRC to remove. Why isn't it the responsibility of KRRC to remove all sediment deposits on our properties if they test them and determine that they are a direct result from the dam? And why are they only required to test it for arsenic and not test these sediment deposits for the other heavy metals? So that is a huge concern for us. Our boat ramp is currently covered under 6 to 12 inches of sediment that was not there prior to the dam drawdown. So that was my comment. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lloyd Beardsmore, it's your turn to speak. Lloyd Beardsmore, Mr. Bransom, I addressed numerous issues deferred prior to them allowing decommissioning. One was the fire mitigation plan that was also dependent upon the deep pools that you were supposedly mapping that we've heard are filled now. So I'm hoping you're going to come up with some alternative plan in the future. It also appears that you expect revegetation to mitigate any dust storms. You also addressed the issue of blasting in the afternoon at COPCO 1 having been a mistake because the winds then carried the dust. If you'd been up there at any point in time, if you'd done any studies, we regularly have morning and afternoon winds. So trying to mitigate that without full knowledge of the wind patterns up there seems to be very naive. And then you are also saying that you are mitigating any dust issues in the project area. Will you now publicly commit to mitigating dust storms if your revegetation plan does not take as you think it will? I addressed issues about irrigation. You say there'll be some of that. It's just a very loose plan. So I want to know what you will commit to today as far as dust storms. And then my final point is the loss of well water for people around COPCO. I don't know if that's happened downstream as well. I know you've done temporary mitigation. Will you commit to drilling those people a new well? And I want to know what you'll commit to now. This local impacts mitigation fund is a clear and present joke. So what will you commit to today to help these people? Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. Good morning.
If you could please press *6, it should unmute you.
Is that working now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. My name is Conrad Fisher. My home is downriver on the Klamath River. And I just wanted to say that we've known for about 20 years that there will be consequences of dam removal, but the benefits are going to far outweigh the harm. I, for several years, have had toxic algae-filled water in front of my house. We all know the reservoirs have been filled with toxic algae, so I think it's just important to acknowledge that we've known a lot of this is going to happen, but in the long run, the benefits will outweigh the cost. Thank you very much.
Okay. Mr. Branson, come on up. I think we're done with public comment, so you can address some of these questions if you want, and then we'll come to the board.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Jackson requested that the Renewal Corporation release testing on heavy metals, and as I indicated, pardon me, during the formal part of my presentation, that when we conduct the testing, we will share the results of that with the county. When the report is available, when we get the testing done from the lab, and we get the results and have an opportunity to interpret those, and we receive the interpretation by a third-party independent water quality scientist, then we will compile the information and we'll share that with the county. We'll endeavor to do that within a week of receiving the report from that third party person. Chrissy Reynolds is concerned about loss of wildlife and a variety of other things. All I can say is, you know, we're subject to exactly the same criteria, and in some cases even more stringent criteria than farmers and ranchers and others who have to be compliant with the Endangered Species Act. And we are in compliance with the Endangered Species Act. We continue to monitor eagles and pond turtles and a variety of other species that are listed or candidates for listing, and at this point we remain in compliance. Emily from our ranch inquired about arsenic and why only arsenic. We're in the process of ongoing conversations with the R Ranch on a sediment remediation contingency plan, as well as a water diversion plan. And information is going back and forth between the R Ranch and the Renewal Corporation, their attorney, and our technical people. And we're continuing to hammer out the details of that, and we'll continue to do that. We recently held a meeting with CAL FIRE for purposes of talking about helicopter access to various deep pools, per Lloyd's comment. And conditions are dynamic, and we don't know with 100% certainty today, you know, exactly where those pools and those access points are going to be. But we continue to engage with CAL FIRE in anticipation of 2024 fire season. To dial in, you know, the information that's available to ensure that we have mapped those deep pool locations and provided for the access consistent with our fire management plan. That's all I had on those comments.
The dust storm.
Yeah, again, the number one thing we can do with regard to controlling dust is to stabilize those sediments on their current location, and we're going to do that primarily by establishing vegetation. And so our focus is on getting that vegetation established, and our permits include success criteria in the form of performance measures. And that's why we're going to be around. Our restoration contractor is expected to be around until 2028 29 30 31 32, you know, whatever it takes to ensure those success criteria are met before we're released from those permits, and that's all part of the reason that those permits include those performance measures, is to ensure the success of that vegetation to help alleviate the dust issues. Because again, job one is getting native vegetation established in those reservoir footprints to stabilize those sediments.
Thank you. Supervisor Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up, two general questions, Mr. Branson. Thanks for coming before us today. Two general questions. One is the dust. Farming background is where I come from. So when you revegetate, dust storms are likely. Will this irrigation system you're setting in place also be used for calming the dust down until the vegetation takes off? I know the goal is the vegetation will take off now, doesn't always. So what plans for that sort of dust mitigation?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Chris, temporary irrigation will be used primarily to support the regrowth of the vegetation, and as a secondary benefit from the irrigation, we would expect some dust control. But as you commented earlier, if I heard you correctly, from the overflow seeding area, we don't intend to do 8-hour sets, you know, for purposes of dust control. We don't have the available water. We have a temporary water right. We need to target it in the right locations to utilize for, you know, for the success of the vegetation as the primary goal. And as a secondary benefit, we expect to get some dust control. We do have dust mitigation measures that apply to the construction activities to manage dust on roads and in our exposed construction activities. And we will utilize water on a regular and frequently as necessary to meet those criteria, but we don't have similar dust control measures for the 2,200 acres of land, which again is why the vegetation establishment is so critical.
Right. Next question. We had talked about this at meeting at COPCO, you attended with Rand. For those that have lost, you know, well capacity, I'll use those words, or the well storm dry, what is the commitment from KRC for replacing that or ensuring water post-project?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Chris, there remain known to us two domestic wells along the Patricia Avenue side of Kakko Lake that lost well production. My understanding is they serve a total of 12 homes. We've provided and will continue to provide temporary water supply to those homes through storage tanks that are connected up to the piping system into the homes until we resolve the permanent solution. And my commitment is the same today as it was then, and that is that in collaboration with the co-licensees and our funding partners, we will implement a long-term solution to replace that water. What I'm in the process of right now, and I'm involved in this personally and directly, directing various alternatives analysis so that within the next couple of weeks, I'm awaiting some test results back on some water samples. I will be in a position to provide to the co-licensees a series of alternatives to replace water long-term and hope to make a recommendation among the alternatives. But we're in the process of gathering enough information so that we can compare these alternatives and ultimately land on a recommendation. And then, of course, in coordination with and the cooperation from those well owners or managers, then we would set out to either implement the solution or enter into an agreement for those well owners to implement the solution. But I need to get to the point where the co-licensees agree on a preferred alternative, and then we can begin the implementation process.
Follow up one more. And I recognize there's delicacy and all that sort of stuff with other partners. We have, a department, Mr. Dean, and their crew's done groundwater wells throughout the county. So I would incorporate Ms. Murphy, Chelsea Murphy, into that conversation as soon as possible so you can get that local knowledge and so you can coordinate that local knowledge of the best spots and those things. That's a major commitment that you're making. It's appreciated. And it's a major stressor for people, in District 1 or anywhere that wells can go to dry.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Chris noted, and I'll just say that we'll continue the engagement that we have with community development and with Chelsea for purposes of advancing this to a resolution.
I'll stop more questions there because colleagues probably have other questions.
Okay. Before I go to the next one, just real quickly while we're on the subject of those wells, what's the water source? It's been reported that it's pumping out of the Klamath River through a carbon filter.
Well, I can dispel that, Mr. Chairman. The water sources for the temporary supply up to the two wells and to the Collier Rest area, the water is drawn from a potable water source in Castella or from City of Wairika water supply.
Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Howe?
Yeah. I don't have a microphone, so... I got quite a few calls about the test blasting, catching people by surprise. What's in the public notification protocol for the blasting?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Haupt, we did have FERC's approval to conduct the test blast, and we are anticipating that we will be underway with the whole series of drilling of the holes, the explosions to break Kakko number one dam up for its removal beginning in the next week or thereabouts. We did send notification letters to the residents around Kakko so they would be aware of the activity that they can anticipate observing and hearing. We were attempting to dispel misinformation that the drilling and blasting would be conducted on a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week schedule, and that's simply not true. But the contractor may do some work relatively early in the morning, as early as 7 a.m. Through the workday, and they may be working as many as 6 days a week, but there certainly won't be any blasting occurring overnight or on a 24-hour a 7-day-a-week schedule. So we've notified the residents. We will be confining those activities to normal working hours, long working days, and long working week in order to allow us to stay on the schedule of having Kakko completely removed by the August time frame.
So I think you can imagine, though, somebody gets a letter, blasting could occur. They get up in the morning, they're sat down to breakfast, having a cup of coffee, and boom. Because it's not real time, you know, and they may have forgotten about the letter. I'm going to make a request that, could you reach out to our OES folks and see if there's some way to link a real time, like a 211 call, to the local residents to notify them the day of, or at least, or maybe even a few hours before blasting is to commence.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Howe, I'll attempt to do some coordination between OES and our contractor on the KRC for purposes of notification once we understand what the contractor's schedule is. And I will commit to making an effort to do those notifications, but what I've learned is that the contractor's schedule is not always well-defined, days in advance. Some of it just happens as they make the preparations. So I can't commit to hitting this right every time, but we'll make an effort to do that coordination.
Thank you. I recall in the analyses that were done in 2012 and again in 2017-18 on the sediments that it was largely thought that the sediments would be mobilized and move their way downriver out to the ocean. Given the testimony that we've heard about pools being filled in and stuff, and maybe this would be a question of Mr. Harris later on too, is there a remediation plan, if you will, sometime in the future to move those sediments? Because they don't appear to be moving from some of those deep pools. And I just have to reflect back that I'm deeply educated, if you will, on the White Salmon River up there and the mitigation they had to do to move sediments after dam removal that wasn't anticipated, as well as with Savage Rapids Dam and some of the sediment work that had to be done to improve the salmon habitat post-dam removal. I'm just interested to know, other than a 64 flood, how those sediments going to move.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Hout, I'm not a fluvial geomorphologist, but I am a fan of rivers, and I have two observations to make. One, deep holes occur in the absence of sediment, right? So the Klamath River has been starved of sediment that ordinarily would have moved through the hydroelectric breach but for the presence of those dams. So many of those deep holes are a result of lack of sediment. The river has been starved of sediment in certain reaches. And secondly, deep holes that do occur in locations where there is ample sediment are in zones of high scour. And so in that case, where some of these holes may have been infilled from sediment released from behind the reservoirs, we would expect those scour conditions to continue. The river is undergoing a very dynamic geomorphological process. And so sediment is going to move. In places where we have deposition today, we will have scour, and in places where we have scour, we will have deposition. That is part of a normal, healthy river process that aquatic species rely on, and part of this process is to reestablish that.
The next couple of questions are probably easier. Do you know what the current fuel capacity is for the bypass tunnel?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Howe, just clarification, are you asking about Iron Gate? Bypass tunnel?
Yeah, sorry.
So
yes.
Thank you. So the low-level outlet tunnel at Iron Gate has a hydraulic capacity that's a function of the amount of water standing on top of the intake tower. So at a higher level of water pressing down on the intake tower, more water will go through the tunnel and out the low-level outlet side of the tunnel. If there is no head, no water standing on the inlet tunnel, the normal discharge with the gate fully open as it is today is somewhere in the 1,300 to 1,400 cubic feet per second. And as I mentioned previously, there is this series of pulse flows that have raised the discharge, the inflow into Iron Gate Reservoir up to as much as 2,500 cubic feet per second. But because of the hydraulic capacity limitation, at about 1,300 to 1,400 or maybe 1,500 or so cubic feet per second, the reservoir's been refilling. Now, as we understand the Bureau going back, Bureau of Reclamation returning to about 1,325 cubic feet per second steady flow, we would anticipate Iron Gate Reservoir will completely drain back down as it did after the drawdown, and we will essentially pass that much water without building up any pool in behind Iron Gate Dam.
So is the 1,300 to 1,400 the current flow that's coming through the bypass?
Yeah, that's basically the hydraulic capacity of the tunnel.
Okay. And then at the time Iron Gate is taken out in September of this year, would that tunnel be taking the entire river capacity flow through it?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, I think I understand the question. Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Haupt, we anticipate being done with Iron Gate Dam removal by September, hopefully starting as early as May. The low-level outlet tunnel will remain in place as the primary means of passing river flow around and through the construction site. We'll utilize the historic coffer dam and the intake, and then ultimately remove, do the final breach at Iron Gate, which would include removing the last of the embankment sections of the dam and the low-level tunnel works.
So it'll be the conduit for the whole river to flow through.
That's right.
Until all of the loose materials.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
It sounds like you are working on dealing with the wells that have gone dry after the immediate after effect of drawdown. Yep, you're working on a plan with partners. Did I get that right?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Valenzuela, yes, that's correct.
So, I think one of the concerns is I hear, a lot of the swirls around water, water quality this, water quality that, well testing, all these kind of things. From your perspective, I have asked the same thing of county staff, do you anticipate more wells going dry with where we are at this moment in time?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Valenzuela, we are not seeing any evidence from our continued groundwater monitoring that there are additional wells at risk. Now, having said that, we believe that the groundwater is approaching a point where it is stabilizing with regard to the elevation of the river, which is the new control point after the reservoirs have been drained. So based on that information, I don't believe that we'll see additional wells lose productivity. I can't guarantee that. But consistent with the wells that we are currently servicing, any additional wells that came into that loss of production would receive temporary water.
So the wells that have gone, that we have to worry about, the ones that you've mentioned, that was anticipated? We anticipated there were going to be some wells that were going to go. I thought I heard that in the previous meeting.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Valenzuela, yes, in fact, that was the one of the three major categories of impacts, anticipated impacts under the mitigation fund, which is what led us to identify the wells that could be at risk and then to do early outreach to the residents for purposes of that allowing them to entertain a financial settlement or wait to see what happened after drawdown.
Thank you.
Supervisor Bowman?
Just want to revisit Collier Rest Area just a little bit. The information that I have was their first delivery of water was on January 11th, which was the first day of drawdown, not before. So I just want to clarify that. And I guess what's important to me there is that they have approximately 12 permanent employees that work there, along with the employees that work at the Collier Interpretive Center building. So those folks are there all the time and impacted by the river water and now the water that's being brought in, which they all appreciate the fact that there's water being brought in so they're not impacted by the river water and what's happening there. So and the deliveries are on time, and they've not run out of water since those deliveries have started, which is very much appreciated. One of the concerns I have is that the contract between you and Caltrans is that it expires on May 15th. I'm hoping that's a negotiable date in case the water quality isn't back to where it's acceptable for drinking and potable, that can be extended. So that their filtration system isn't, you know, working overtime, and that those water quality levels are okay, and that the consistent level of monitoring can be made so that those people are safe. The other thing is that there is somewhere between 500 and a minimum of 1,000 people that go through that rest area a month, and all of those people are being exposed to the potential of that river water. Right now, as I said, it's okay because it's all being delivered. So there is a lot of potential there for exposure. So I just really want to make sure that you're on top of that and you're consistent with what the contract says, and that you're working with Caltrans to make sure that that contract stays in place as long as it needs to. The other thing that is of importance is the economic and labor impacts to their filtration system, in that if the turbidity and those sediment levels stay high enough after May and they're using the river water, they have to flush that system really frequently. And that takes their whole entire system down. They'll have to go back to having water brought in and their tanks filled and switch over to potable water again instead of the river system, and that's a huge impact. So they'll have to continue to work with you to bring water in when they have to flush that system, and that's a really big impact. So I need some reassurance from you, and they need some reassurance from you that that will continue after that May 15th deadline.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Wilburn, thank you for the comments and for your attention to that, you know, important drinking water system. I'm well aware that we're coming into the summer travel season. The numbers that you cited are likely to go up significantly, and despite that contract having been written to expire in May, we absolutely will revisit whether an extension is appropriate, and if necessary, we'll re-up the terms, and we'll continue to provide temporary water supply there. We don't want to have any impact on the operation or maintenance of the water system or any aspect of the functionality of the rest stop. We're committed to continuing to ensure that there's a safe water supply for the employees as well as the visitors who utilize the facilities.
And as far as the water monitoring goes, I'm assuming that the state is taking care of that at this point. Caltrans and or the State Water Resources Control Board is taking care of that water monitoring, because I know they have to test the water.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Wilbur, the Renewal Corporation certainly continues to do the monitoring consistent with our permits, and my understanding is that there are other entities that are similarly doing water quality testing to ensure that conditions are favorable or appropriate. But again, nobody's drinking water from the Klamath River, surface water from the Klamath River, as of this time that I'm aware of, or that we as an organization are aware of. So while I'm certain that testing is ongoing, it's not for purposes of determining whether surface water is safe for drinking at this point in time.
No, but
to my knowledge.
Right, but I believe they have to test the water, even the delivered water.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Chairman, Supervisor Wilburn, I apologize for my confusion. Yeah, the water is coming from a certified potable water supplier and a certified potable water source that undergoes all of the testing that's required for potable water supplies. Yes.
Thank you.
So, just to clarify, I think when you say call you, I thought I heard 500 to 1,000 a month. Is that a week?
Yeah.
Would be a week, yeah,
right.
Because it's a million visitors
right.
a year, roughly.
Right.
That,
that's true.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So it's high volume. Yeah. So a couple quick questions, and I have two public comments left, and those are going to be the last two on this. If that's all right, Mr. Branson, I'm sorry.
Of course, I'm happy to be
okay.
here as long as
necessary,
Mr. Chairman.
I think you've indicated earlier, prior to last week's conversation that this board had with regard to the Klamath and water testing, the KRRC has indicated that you will be testing for two heavy metals that weren't, tested for prior. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, if I understand your question, what I suggested today was that in addition to the full panel of metals and constituents that the county tested for, the Renewal Corporation is proposing to add certain other parameters, not additional metals, but other parameters. I believe that includes things like alkalinity and water hardness that would allow us to use the information from those test results to make comparisons of the water quality to other standards beyond simply drinking water standards. So in order to look at some of these other standards, we need additional information. So when I made reference to additional parameters, not metals, but other things that would allow us to look at other comparative analysis.
Prior to this, the testing didn't include that, is that correct?
Our permit requires us to test for a certain range of parameters
right.
that includes a limited sampling of metals, but I'm offering to expand
right.
that to be consistent with the county's testing.
All right.
Yes.
We'll go to the last two public comments. Bill Reynolds. Good afternoon.
Good morning. Good afternoon, I guess it is almost. My name is Phil Reynolds. I am a resident of Kapu Lake for 41 years, so I'm a newcomer, so to speak. Something that was brought up at the meeting at COPCO in October, I believe it was that there was going to be signage put up about construction. No signage has been put up at the front of Ager Beswick Road, as said it was going to be taken care of. So it goes to holding a person to their word, which it's hard to hold someone to their word when they continuously change their words, I guess. The second thing I had was they also sent us a letter about the blasting that was supposed to take place between the 6th and the 8th, and we got the letter on the 14th. So I thought that was a little interesting. Now, I guess it was just a sample blast, but we got the letter about the blasting that was going to happen after it happened. So the other thing is, after having lived there for 41 years, there's a lot of people that are only summertime residents. So the wells that are affected right now could possibly skyrocket because the people haven't shown up for the summer yet. And they don't have their systems turned on. They don't have their pumps turned on. So, and there's, I can count off the top of my head, probably at least a dozen that are close enough to where the lake used to be, where I think it's going to be a problem. There's a few that are on the lake that haven't had a problem yet, or on the footprint of the lake that haven't had a problem yet, but it goes to well depth, the particular aquifer that they're tied into. I don't know the answer to any of these questions. You know, I've only lived there for a short while, but I do know that it needs to be addressed because these people that maybe didn't want to participate in the $5,000 mitigation fund to replace their well, which wouldn't have covered it. So I think that that's something that needs to be addressed. And I do thank you all for your time and your consideration, and hopefully you still want to move forward with your proclamation. Thank you.
Thank you. And Noel?
And Noel, I'm sorry that I'm dragging this through, but for clarity and transparency...
Pull that down on, yeah, there you go.
I have to do this at church, too. For clarity and transparency, I'd like to know who the co-licensee is that KRRC is working with for the permanent fix of the two wells that have gone dry in Kotko Lake. We know that KRRC is doing the temporary fix, but again, at the last meeting at Kotko, he says co-licensee. I'd just like to have a name in front of co-licensee and who that department is that he's working with. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Branson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. To respond to Mr. Reynolds regarding construction signage, he raised Agger Beswick. We're not moving construction equipment up and down Agger Beswick Road. Our construction equipment is generally confined to the Kotko Road side where we do have signage. But I will follow up because I do want to make sure that we're responsive to any commitment that was made for additional signage there. And at the Kotko community meeting last night, I did speak with a gentleman and his daughter, whose names I can't recall right now, but I did, he indicated he's a summer resident and was concerned about firing up his well system for the summer season. And I did commit to him that we would be happy to have one of our water well consultants present with him when he chooses to fire that system up for purposes of determining, you know, whether his well is operational or whether, you know, there may be some issues with productivity resulting from drawdown, if we can determine that, you know, to be the cause. And that offer would stand for others as well. So if anybody is, you know, coming up for the summer season and wants to, you know, have us present when they fire up their well, we'd be more than happy to do that. And again, you know, we continue to monitor the network of groundwater wells with those folks who, you know, allow us to come in and install monitoring equipment, and we're, you know, we're learning more about it. So if there are additional impacts, we'll stand ready to address those. Ms. Noel asked about the co-licensees. The co-licensees for the Lower Klamath Hydroelectric Project include the Klamath River Renewal Corporation, the State of California, and the State of Oregon.
And one last thing on the removal of J.T. Boyle and Iron Gate, because they're dirt filled, basically. I think J.T. Boyle is dirt filled as
partial.
How is that going to be removed? Is it going to be hauled out on Iron Gate as well, or what's the plan?
I'm trying to do too many things at once, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate your indulgence. We will request permission from FERC to begin removal of those embankment portions of oil and all of Iron Gate Dam to commence roughly the 1st of May. And the contractor will utilize a technique where I think at both Iron Gate and the earthen section of J.C. Boyle, where they'll simply move excavators out onto the top of the dam and begin to remove the material from the top of the dam down, putting that material into large dump trucks. And then that material will be cycled to the disposal sites with empty trucks returning to be refilled and set that up on a loop system. So that's the approach that will be utilized to
will there be a sediment barrier of some kind to prevent more sediment from going into the river?
Absolutely. The contractor will deploy significant erosion and sediment control best management practices. Now, we do know, and this is captured in our planning documents and in our permits, that when we perform the final breach of Iron Gate and Kotko Number 1 and J.C. Boyle Dams in the late summer, that there will be an additional spike of turbidity coming through the river because of the sediment that's currently impounded behind those historic cofferdams. So we do know that there will be a future spike, which is why we're working really hard to get the dams removed and allow that turbidity spike to move through the system in advance of the return of adult salmon in the fall to do everything we can to minimize the impacts on the returning results. I remember, if you'll indulge me, Mr. Chairman, what the other part of my brain was trying to do when you posed your question about the methodology for removal of the embankment dams. And I believe Mr. Reynolds commented that the letter received by the residents regarding the blasting was sort of an after-the-fact kind of thing. The intent of the letter was to notify the residents of the activity that was going to take place roughly from after the test blast through August, when we expect to have COPCO number one completely removed. We did not get the letter out in sufficient time to notify everybody in advance of the test blast, but we wanted to make sure that people were aware, first and foremost, that there will not be 24/7 activity, and to generally understand what the schedule of that drilling and blasting of COPCO number one will be during the removal of that facility. So thank you for that, Mr. Chairman.
And I would, you know, I would just reiterate, I think you've heard from the community up there as well as this board that communication is a strong factor in at least keeping that dialogue opening to what is really going on, and it lessens the frustration and angst that comes from, you know, late or little communication. So with that, I'll let you go, and we're going to take a 5-minute break. We're going to go through, we're going to finish the agenda before we adjourn today. Okay.